Welcome to the Safety Podcast, where we connect health, safety and environment to keep you learning, evolving and having a positive impact. Thanks for taking the time to join us for this episode. Let's get started. Hey there, how's it going? Thank you for taking the time to join us for the Safety Podcast. On this episode, we've got Robin Maunder Cochram from all the way from the Netherlands, and he works for a business called EY, which is a global organization made up of a lot of different businesses. But what he does for them is sort of, it's a global certification body, which I'm sure a lot of you are very aware of when it comes to things like ISO standards. So the reason I linked up with him, I saw that he was doing a lot of work around ISO 45001, which is obviously of interest to many people involved in health and safety or just running businesses. I was quite interested personally in the whole participation and engagement part of that, which of course, you know, we're doing a bit of work on here at safety.com with some of our customers. So I just wanted to sort of dig into the detail around what the expectations were, how businesses were getting on, and to see if Robin could give us any tips, you know, in regards to what he's experiencing. So if you're like me and you'd like to hear some insights from Robin's experiences implementing 45001 alongside businesses across the globe, then stay tuned. So thank you for coming on to the Safety Podcast today, Robin, all the way from the Netherlands. How's things with you?
Very good, thank you.
Good, and I'm glad to have someone on the show at last to speak to me about this participation piece around ISO 45001, which obviously you're willing to do, and we had a discussion and you were very knowledgeable about it, and you're trying to tackle it with businesses at the moment. But just for our audience, obviously they haven't had the privilege of being introduced to you yet. Could you give us a bit of a rundown as to your background and what it is you do?
So I currently work for EY Certified Point, which is a global competence within the EY network. And we provide certification, training and implementation services for ISO standards. Amongst those is 45001, which I am leading at the moment. Before this, I was working with various logistics companies like XP Logistics, TNT Express, and FedEx International on their health and safety or EHS strategies.
Okay, so logistics is your primary background then, and you have plenty of exposure from the EHS point of view as well. So that's good to know. And well, it was pretty obvious when we had a discussion initially that you had lots of experience previously with this, and I'm sure you'll know, and you won't take offense hopefully at this whenever I say certifications and ISO standards can often be a very dry topic for people when it comes to, you know, discussing them and getting into the nitty-gritty of it. What are your perceptions of it, just from the, you know, off the top? What's your perception of the whole certification process?
Well, if you asked me this question a couple of years back, before I was working for a certification body like EY Certified Point, I would have agreed with you. Like, the perception in many industries today is that it is not really a value add. But the more and more I work with different clients who have from different industries who all have their own reasons for getting certified, I've realized that there's actually two profiles of people when it comes to certification. There is a type of person that needs to get certified, for example, because of commercial or other reasons. And they're looking into that standard and looking requirement by requirement and asking themselves the question, like, how can I fulfill this requirement? So their whole perception is aimed at that requirement as on itself standing relevance or something, which is not true. And there's this second part of people who look at a standard and appreciate it as a guide of inspiration. So they look at these requirements and they think, if an entire ISO committee of international experts on my field tell me that the context of an organization is important for health and safety, what does that say? What does that tell me? Should I do something about that? And it's those type of people who unleash the true added value. And there you also see management systems, whereas when you come as an auditor, you don't get a pile of paperwork thrown at you that suggests compliance. No, you're having constant discussions with people who do the things that are required to be done as part of their day-to-day job.
Okay.
That's the difference, and that also makes a very big difference in terms of value add, of course.
Yeah, 100% it does. And I mean, from my own perspective, being involved in ISO certifications in terms of managing them and implementing them in businesses, that in terms of the actual auditing process, if you do have, you know, your systems implemented properly, and if they are integrated into how things are actually done, the auditing process becomes a hell of a lot easier as a result. Which, you know, for HSEQ managers or whatever standards that you're managing, it makes life a lot less stressful, I think. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I do agree. And, you know, the thing is, in the end, it's pretty simple. If you look at an ISO standard with the question in the back of your mind, like, how can I become compliant, then compliance is the aim. And in the best possible scenario, that's exactly what will produce compliance. If you, however, look at a standard and see what type of risks and opportunities are behind every line of text, yeah, then the output can be so much more.
Okay, so you're talking about risks and opportunities there, which that's interesting. It's a bit of a crossover to a previous guest I had on the show here, actually, that I was speaking with very recently. And he talked about the approach of either looking at risks to, well, from a compliance point of view, and just trying to minimize them, being defensive, or looking at things through the lens of opportunity and, you know, embracing the opportunities that exist. Which is obviously an offensive strategy, and something that is much more progressive and opens up many more doors. So I think you're saying something similar there. But if we take it, obviously you're on the 45001 standard, covers a lot of stuff. A lot of people will be familiar with many aspects of it that are existing from the previous standard, the OSAS standard. And what I'm interested in here, and picked up your interest in it, which, you know, seems very genuine, is the participation piece of this. What, just to remind those who don't know the ins and outs of it, and to remind myself as well, what does the ISO 45001 standard ask when it comes to consultation and participation of the workforce?
Well, it lists its requirements for consultation and participation in clause 5.4. And if you look into those requirements, then they've also split it between consultation and participation. So maybe it's useful to first position those two concepts.
Split them.
Because when we talk about consultation, that's really a management involving non-managerial workers in what is ultimately their own decision. Okay, so this process, consultation process, is really aimed at gathering the highly detailed knowledge that non-managerial workers have about their own work proceedings and about their own workplaces to make sure that you make well-informed decisions.
Okay.
So that should be the output. Now, participation exceeds that. Participation is really reaching decisions together. So the topics on which you consult or participate, they're also split between those. Requirement A to E, top of my head. I'm not sure if it's useful to go and look into every single requirement there. But I do think it's useful for people to understand that there is a thought behind the segregation, the categorization between consultation and participation.
Yeah.
And that's based on it has everything to do with the day-to-day of the people of the non-managerial workers. So if you're looking at the consultation topics, you see that these are more, if you tactical, if you will. They are not in no sense of the word operational, and they have very, or at least less, overlap with the day-to-day of the people sitting on the other end of the table.
Yeah.
Whereas the participation topics, they do have a very significant overlap. Like if we have an example of a topic that you would consult non-managerial workers on, if you're ISO 45000 certified, is when establishing occupational health and safety objectives. Now you can imagine that that topic is a little bit more tactical or even strategic compared to determining the actions required to eliminate hazards. And the reason for this is that the actions required to eliminate hazards, that requires making a decision on that, requires the information that people find in their day-to-day jobs. You see, so the moment that you get together on the table, they are capable of participating at that very moment, because they can tell you, like, yeah, we're working with this and this machine, this and this has happened in the past, I consider those near misses, have you considered that? And then the manager says, well, no, I haven't, thanks for sharing. There we go, there's our action.
So what are you saying, that there is a connection between the consultation and the participation pieces of this as well?
Well, yeah, connection, they are used to categorize, so they are used to divide certain topics. The main difference between the two terms is that participation goes a little bit further than consultation. Consultation is really management asking an employee their opinion, their views on something, but ultimately it's their decision. It's the manager's decision. Which is fine. According to the ISO 45000 requirements, that's fine. Even if that decision then goes against what they have heard. But participation is making decisions together. You see the difference there?
Yeah, so it is more to do with, or even together or alone, I guess. So there's an autonomous aspect of that as well, or an empowering aspect of it, is there?
Well, I hope so. I really hope that the organization understands it that way, yeah.
Well, that's what you would hope, yeah. You know, that, and a big challenge, I think, for a lot of managers is actually letting go of that micromanagement and that decision making of every little process, and that is a big challenge. Is that where do you think that's where a lot of the motivation for this participation part has came from, or where do you think it's driven from initially?
Well, I do agree with you. I think that is a factor for sure. I think that another factor is that this is not a new thing. Right. I mean, we have workers' councils for many years now, especially here in Europe, but outside of Europe, in the United Kingdom, America, you name it. I mean, this legislation has been implemented probably even in one of the earlier International Labour Organization conventions.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's been out there for quite some time. And in the past, if we look back at also, there was not too much attention on it, which is a bit too bad because, I mean, take, for example, Germany. In Germany, the Workers' Council decides a lot when it comes to health and safety. So if you, as a scheme holder like ISO, if you look at that, I mean, it only makes sense that if you're gathering experts from all over the world to develop a standard for people to implement and work towards excellence, that you would include something like this, right?
Mm-hmm. And what does participation look like to you if it was done well within an organization? And I mean, I suppose another question is slightly separate, but what were we not doing before that we need to be doing now? Or what has been pinpointed by these experts to say, look, we aren't doing this well enough. We need to improve, and this is why participation has been brought into its own.
Well, one of the things that's explicitly mentioned in the standard is obstacles for participation.
Okay.
Which is, for example, and I really, really hope that this doesn't occur often in businesses, but people who are actively silencing others to speak up when they see something that concerns them for their own health and safety or that of others. So that's one. It's explicitly out there. If I look at my experience here, especially, I mean, you get to see a lot of different organizations. And what I do see frequently in dysfunctional participation processes is actually comes down to lack of support. So you see that, for example, employees who are doing it as an addition to their job, and they don't really have the time, nor have they gotten any proper training, or they have gotten training of a union, which I dare to say comes across to me as a little bit one-sided. As in, you push the employer to do certain things instead of you need to collaborate with your employer to think of some things together. But anyway, and they are not fed the right information either. And those are three critical things, right? You want to look at time, training, and information. So you give people time to fulfill their job as a representative, for example. You give them the training to understand what they need to understand to have a well-informed opinion about the subjects that are going to be discussed. And you give them the information that fuels that opinion so they can actually add value when the discussion is starting. Now, if one of those three is missing, it's never going to work. And the same goes to managers. I often see these type of conversations where or the workers or the managers, they come to the table and they don't really know what they're talking about because they have not really prepared. And when you ask some questions, basic health and safety questions, you already see them struggle. So, yeah, then you need to ask yourself where that conversation is possibly going to go.
What types of things are you seeing? I know ISO 45001 is relatively new in the grand scheme of things, and a lot of businesses, as I'm sure you're aware, and I'm sure you're helping them with, are trying to transition and understand, understand the requirements for it. What type of struggles or deficiencies are you actually seeing on the ground, you know, when it comes to this participation requirement? And or the consultation part, which maybe has been given more weight now that the ISO standard has been revised?
Quite some, but maybe to keep it to the top issues. So what I see within bigger organizations, they often implemented this through their worker representation, right? Which makes sense. Actually, even the standard also refers to that making sense. So no need to elaborate on that. But
do you mean unions, or who are you referring to there?
Unions can be. Can be a difficult definition here. I more mean that when you have a workers' council in a lot of countries, they also have a delegated entity that is allocated for HSE or health and safety topics.
Okay.
Now they've implemented it by having these people put the topics of the standard on their agenda.
Okay, I get you.
That's what they've done, provided that, coming back to those three elements, time, training, and information, provided that that's done well, you do see that the right type of discussions tend to happen. But with bigger organizations, you're dealing with representatives, and representatives function when they represent, right? So if you look at the processes in those big organizations where it doesn't work, despite the time, training, and information, it's because the representatives often do not represent. If you ask them, like, do you talk with your peers on the topics that you're going to discuss next month or next week? And it's like, well, not really. I just read the information I get and then I formulate an opinion and then I take part. Yeah, which is not necessarily, you're not necessarily representing the people. And to hand people or the listeners a best practice on this end. I've once visited a company which has had a system of local site safety committees, if you will, and the chairman of those committees was participated in like this workers council type of thing. The workers council was for the entire organization, and because they had the chairmen of from every location, the site safety committee of every location had a head, which was also participating in this workers council, which covered the entire organization. And that worked very, very well, because these site safety committees, the members were instructed to take at least 5 opinions of their peers and bring it to the table whenever they had a meeting. And that worked very, very well, because they sourced information from all the corners of the organization to define, like, hey, what's going on with health and safety? What do people see? And it was sometimes very obvious what they were seeing. Sometimes there were complaints in what was offered as objective information. But sometimes there were also very insightful pieces of feedback. And other times there were also patterns identified from the different locations where you saw, like, hey, we have just experienced this change as an organization. And we see now that from our X locations, the majority of them is experiencing this difficulty. Now, then it makes easier to take action.
So, yeah, well, that's the point I was going to get to. I mean, it's all well and good everyone talking about, you know, different issues and so on. Do you see an active thread of action taking related to, you know, the participation itself? Is that an issue? Is it something that you know, that we need to get better at? Or would you have any advice on what you would like to see from what you have seen in organizations to date?
Yeah, certainly. When I was still working in FedEx, I had a manager. He's called Daniel Flickel, and what he did is a best practice that people should be aware of, because what he said is, we are not going to focus on fire safety. We're not going to focus on electricity. We're not going to focus on any of that stuff. We're going to focus on 3 things, which is dock safety, manual handling, and internal traffic, because we know that those are the biggest risks in the organization. And because he did that, and he established that as the focus of everything that was going on health and safety, that also, if we talk about consultation and participation, focused the attention of people when they were talking during these meetings.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, you saw a change. Look, there is a very common deficiency, not only in participation and consultation, but in health and safety processes in general, is that we try to focus on so many different topics at once.
Yeah.
We have audit findings, we have objectives, we have a risk list, which is probably in Excel and super, super big. That doesn't help.
I don't know what you're talking about. I've never seen one of those before.
Doesn't sound familiar at all, does it?
No.
but that's the thing, right? I mean, if you have 50 different things lined up for yourself to do, and you have yourself and 2 other people, for example, to do it, then how realistic is that?
Yeah.
The power of the organization, right?
It's a big issue. It's something we're very, very afraid to do as well. So anyone, if Daniel has, you know, made the decision to do that, there's probably been a lot of people that have looked at it and thought, what is he doing? But I 100% understand why he would do that, and focusing that energy and attention towards those hazards that are actually really relevant for the business can reap a lot of benefits. And once you do that, now the other question I have from this, then, how do businesses make sure, and this is something that I've spoken with other guests about recently, how do we make sure that safety or EHS isn't isolated and on its own, and that it's integrated with the other functions and operations of the business?
Well, yeah, I mean, if you talk about ISO 45001 here, there's a hard requirement. And what you just mentioned in ISO 45001 terms is what they refer to as the integration of health and safety. And what they mean by that, and this is something that that there's no better piece of advice, I think, is to not think in terms of having, for example, I will give an example that makes the explanation easier. If you walk into an organization and you see a beautiful health and safety management system with all its own procedures and work instructions, you name it, it has it all and it's all brilliant. And then you realize when you walk into the operation that everybody's using their own work instructions, which were created by the operation. Oh, and by the way, that procurement instruction that was created by health and safety, that's also a duplicate because procurement has its own process description. Mm-hmm. This is a very straightforward example where even the documents are not even aligned, yet alone the process is behind. So what's actually required, and I think that is actually a key to success when it comes to health and safety, is that you're going to look with honest interest towards what your colleagues are doing. Try to get a feel what makes them tick. Try to get a feel of what they find interesting, where their priorities lie, and then try to ask yourself the question, okay, how can I make health and safety part of that?
Yeah.
I can still remember some time ago when we were there was a very big risk within one of the companies that we provide advisory work for. And we got the question that, can you change that? Can you take action on that risk? But the action that we had to take represented a big change for the organization. Now, you can make a decision there. Are you going to to justify that change based on the relevance of safety alone, knowing that if you try to do that and people say no, that's the last time that you can bring it up in the coming 2 years, because the next time you bring it up, they will just tell you we had this discussion already. Or are you going to wait until you have found other interests within the organization where you combine this with? In this case, operational excellence could be combined with what we wanted to do. And then all of a sudden, we had more stakeholders behind the change, and it was easier to get it done.
Just combining the other interests and getting stakeholders on board, and then not having the safety or the AHS interests on their own when you're pitching anything is probably a great piece of advice. I would say, and I would imagine for a lot of people listening here, they could think about the last time that they proposed something from an AHS position or perspective, and ask themselves truly, you know, had they sold it in a way that considered all the other aspects, whether that was negative or positive, when it comes to things like operational excellence, as you say, quality, profitability, sustainability, and all those other aspects. For anyone listening, I'm sure a lot of our audience will have this 45001 challenge either ahead of them or else they'll be in the middle of it. Is there anything that you would say to them that they can do, or even to ask a question to get them started in the process towards fulfilling the participation requirement?
Well, I think that the most important thing to know before you start is to really ask yourself the question where you are, and be realistic with where you want to, what your ambitions are, because overreaching it is not going to motivate anyone, and also spread the changes that you need to make. I have seen transition efforts from OSOS, for example, to 45 or just to 45 or implementing any health and safety management system. I've seen those efforts fail because people were immediately reaching for a generative health and safety culture without asking themselves the question where we are. And those companies then, for example, are on a passive level and you want to reach excellence. That's not gonna fly. So knowing where you are and being realistic in where you're going towards, That's the starting point. And before you start, really, really try to understand, who do I need to make the change happen, and how do I grasp their interest?
Okay, that's perfect. That's excellent piece of advice just to take away here from this conversation. And I think a lot of people will find benefit in that thought process of first of all, figuring out where you are and being honest about it, being conscious of not overreaching, and then also, as you say, whose interest do I need, or who do I need on board to try and execute my plan? So that's fantastic, Robin. Thank you for coming on to chat about this with us. I really do appreciate it, and I'm sure our listeners will too. I know you have one or two things going on outside of EY there, or maybe it's to do with EY regarding books and different bits and pieces, some publications. Do you want to give us a bit of information about that, what you're up to?
At the moment, I'm maintaining a blog on ISO 45001.
Ah, okay.
Which is really aimed at helping people in their migration efforts. And indeed, Daniel and I are writing a book on the durable implementation of health and safety management systems, where these aspects, these change aspects, the pragmatic, the personal side, people side of health and safety, that's really the focus point.
Oh, awesome. Well, that ties in really well with a lot of the conversations that we're having here on the Safety Podcast, to be honest. So I will be keeping my eye out for that. And we'll get some links off you as to where people can find that blog, because I'm sure a lot of people will find interest in your helpful articles there anyway. So thank you for that. And if you don't mind, we can share your LinkedIn profile also with everyone. So thanks again for coming on to the Safety Podcast. It's been a pleasure.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
That's it for a call with Robin. It was great to get a bit of an insight into what he's experiencing so far with 45001. I did kind of wrap it up towards the end of the podcast, so I'll not spend too much time going over the same information again, but just a couple of things to remember that stuck out for me from this conversation was, make sure you're not trying to focus on too many things at once. This happens with me. It's happened with me in my career before. It's happened also within, you know, my own business as well. And it's something that I think is extremely important. And I would definitely agree with Robin from this point of view of making sure that you're keeping focused on what you're trying to execute and not trying to juggle too many things at once. Although it might make you feel like you're really busy, you have to ask yourself the question, how effective is it, and what are you really getting done? What are you completing, and what are you achieving? So that's something to bear in mind. As well as that, make sure that whenever you're setting goals and you're trying to strive for improvement within a business, that it's really important to understand where are you at the moment and be realistic about where you want to get to. Because as Robin said, it's not motivational for anyone if you're overreaching and striving for too much within an unrealistic time frame. And he just lastly wrapped up there with something that was also important when you're asking yourself, how do you go about making improvements? And it ties in well with some recent podcasts and conversations and safety skill podcasts that we've had here at safety.com around stakeholder engagement and involving people that are affected by what you do and vice versa. And Robin was saying about asking the question to yourself, who do I need to help me make this reality and make change? And once you've identified that person or those people, then it's just about understanding how you can get their attention and get them on board. So that's it for this podcast. Thank you ever so much for joining me. As we always say at the end of it, if you do enjoy the podcast and you want us to keep doing them, then we'd really, really appreciate if you could leave us a review and a comment on iTunes or whatever platform you're listening to, of course, to get us more exposure and keep us motivated as well, because it does take a lot of time and effort to put these things together, believe it or not. As well as that, keep an eye out for our first course that we're developing at safety.com by the start of the second quarter. In other words, April, we're hoping to have our first online course available, which is going to be risk assessment. So if anybody's looking for any risk assessment training for your employees or for your teams, then keep an eye on that, and I'll communicate that to all our subscribers and via the podcast as well. So thank you for taking this half an hour out of your day. Hopefully you've got some value from the podcast, and hopefully we'll see you next time. All the best. Thank you once again for joining us for this episode. We really hope you got value from the content. If you'd like to provide us with some feedback, which we would obviously love, please take a minute to rate and review the podcast on whichever platform you're using. Also, if you enjoyed it, please hit subscribe to make sure you catch our future episodes. And of course, share it with anyone who you think may find it useful. For more free resources and to find out more about what we do, you're always welcome to visit us at safety.com. Until next time, take care and good luck.